You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama, baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, 17 banners, way up in the rafters, J. King, John Corrales, and Sam Jam Packard. Focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I want to thank you for making us part of your regular routine. We're recording at odd times this week. It's a weird week, the end of August. But we're here and recording early in the day rather at the end than at the end of it. We're the Rain and Jays. I'm John Corrales. I cover the team for Mass Live, joined by the kid, Jay King from The Athletic. Talking today about what it's going to take for Jason Tatum to become an all-star for the first time. ESPN putting out a list of predictions by their experts, and him being a first-time all-star is one of them. Gordon Hayward held an event, a girls' clinic, earlier this week. Talked a little bit about Andrew Luck, which was interesting, and how the coaches are treating him being around. But we'll start, Jay, with Enes Kanter, who will talk to anybody and say anything. He is not afraid of being on camera.
No, he's definitely not. Some would say he wouldn't mind the attention of it.
Yes, I believe that. See, he seems to thrive when the lights are on.
He's just a classic troll, I feel like.
He enjoys himself, one way or the other. So, Enes Kanter went on, what was it, First Take, that Fox Sports 1 show. Talked about a lot of different things.
First Takes on ESPN, right?
Oh, whatever it was.
Whatever that other one. The First Take-ish thing.
With
Nick Wright.
Yeah. The show, what the hell is it called? I don't even know what the hell it's called. This is professional podcasting right here.
This is August podcasting at its best.
I lost the hell it's called. Clearly I do not give a shit what it's called. But he was on that Fox Sports 1 thing talking about, any number of things. One of the things that he said was
first things first.
Oh, see, I knew it was a first thing, something.
Yeah, that's like, a ripoff.
It's a total ripoff. And that's the one with Nick Wright, who clearly hates the Celtics. And so he was on there and said, amongst the things that he said, was that he would pick Kemba Walker any day over Kyrie Irving. And he said that he felt that there was a negative energy when the Blazers played the Celtics. You buying this?
That there was a negative energy?
No, that he takes Kemba over Kyrie any day. I mean, there was clearly a negative energy.
Yeah, there was definitely a negative energy.
We were there. We saw it.
So here's the thing. I know Enes Kanter will just say anything, and I know him saying things doesn't necessarily matter much because he's always doing it. He's kind of just always in the mix, is how I would put it. Like, he doesn't shy away from sharing his opinions, whether they're
right,
loved, hated, whatever. I just don't think he's the guy to speak on that particular issue.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
And like, it seems like the rest of the organization has decided after Kyrie left that they'd be nice-ish to him and not air out any of the grievances. And Marcus Smart has gone on TV and defended Kyrie. And Terry Rozier had some comments defending Kyrie. And nobody else has kind of come out and said anything about the past. Everybody just kind of seems to want to leave it in the past. But then you have Enes Kanter going on TV and saying that he thinks he would take Kemba over Kyrie, and there was this big negative energy, and Kemba's a natural leader and this and that. And it just seems unnecessary to me. Like, Kanter wasn't there. Kanter didn't experience it. Like, it just seems very unnecessary. And I know he's probably trying to audition for his WWE job or an analyst job after he's done, or whatever the case may be. And if so, he did a good job of that. Like, he sparked discussion. He was entertaining. He gave his take. I just don't know from the Celtics perspective if it is at all productive.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you here that he and the Celtics can play it off like that's Enes's opinion, and he was on the outside looking in, saying things like, "I'll definitely pick Kemba any day over Kyrie." Well, Kemba's his point guard right now. Kemba's going to be the guy that gets him buckets. He's not going to say anything about like, "Well, you know, I like Kyrie better, but I'll take Kemba anyway." Like, he's obviously, I think, going to say that. And I agree that Kanter will kind of embellish, is that the right word, for effect, maybe. So will he take Kemba over Kyrie any day? Well, switch him. If the Celtics traded him to the Nets midseason, let's see what he says. You know, so I don't know that he's fully on board with that mentality. But at the same time, I do agree that there was an obvious negative energy, especially towards the end of the season as things weren't working together. Was that all Kyrie's fault? It's all fallen on Kyrie. It's very easy to blame it on Kyrie because he's gone now. And all of the stuff that came up about him, it's very easy to just pile that up, put it in a bundle and just drop it at his doorstep and be like, that's all your baggage. But it clearly was across many other players on the team. It's not just that one guy. So
how long do you think it's going to be before we have to stop, before we get to stop discussing Kyrie Irving?
So,
and how much of the negative energy was his fault, and who's to blame for the 2018-19 Celtics cratering? I am very excited for the day when we can leave all that behind us. And granted, it's August. It's August in the NBA, which means the topics of conversation are like Carmelo versus Jared Dudley and guys like workout videos that are being thrown out there on Twitter. And it is all the dumbest conversation. And now we have someone who wasn't with the Celtics last year bringing up Kyrie Irving and discussing Kyrie Irving. And so here we are talking about it again. I feel like it'll probably be like the Ray Allen thing, where it's like every once in a while, somebody will make a comment. It'll come back up. We'll have the same stupid conversation about it, and nobody will enjoy it. Nobody will be informed by it. Nobody will be able to get away from it, though.
That's the thing. So, it just keeps cropping up. So you asked the question, how long is it going to take for this to go away? There's a part of me that says it'll never go away because there was an opportunity here, and the more the perception of it being Kyrie's fault lingers, the more it's just going to keep coming back. If Brooklyn doesn't do well, then I think that amplifies the conversation, because Brooklyn is in such a similar spot as the Celtics, a team that overachieved with all of its young guys without Kyrie. Then you throw Kyrie in there, and also an injured star partner who's going to miss the entire season. And if that follows the same track, if Brooklyn suddenly there's a regression of any kind, then people will look at that and be like, see, it was Kyrie Irving's fault. Like, Kyrie needs to go out and the Nets need to be like overachievers so people can like, that's the only thing that would, I think, kill the noise in Boston, because it's such a similar situation. If Kyrie went there and it was like great, then maybe people would be like, okay, obviously it's not, it wasn't just Kyrie. It was, there were other things. Maybe the attention will turn to Terry Rozier a little bit more. I don't know. But I think what happens in Brooklyn in the beginning of this season really plays into how much louder or how much longer this conversation goes.
It just goes to show how much this conversation has dominated the last, like, what, 6 months?
Oh, yeah, easily.
Like, from probably, what, the February press conference where he came out and decommitted to the Celtics.
When was the one in New York City? Was that in February?
Yeah, I think it was February.
Yeah.
Like, shortly before the trade deadline.
A couple of weeks before the trade deadline, right.
Yeah. So ever since then, the conversation has dominated our discussion, and it's been the biggest storyline. And then Kyrie left, and Kemba came in, and the Celtics have tried to create a new feeling about them, a new vibe, a new culture, a new feel that – they hope will be very different than last season. But so it's going to be, I think, something that we discuss for a while now, because one way or the other, maybe if the Celtics are mediocre again, then the conversations are going to happen. Well, how much blame really goes to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward
and Stevens?
Maybe those guys weren't properly rated. Maybe too much was put on those guys. And too little blame for last year's failings were put on those guys. And meanwhile, if they go the other direction, if they win 50-something games and do better than they did a year ago, and Kemba comes in and sets Boston on fire and everyone falls in love with him, like, okay, yeah, that's that'll bring back the Kyrie discussion. It's not going anywhere. It's going to be here. And we're going to discuss it. Yay.
We're going to stop discussing it now, though. We're done. We're done with this topic. We're going to come back after the break and talk about Gordon Hayward, his event, his interesting comments about Andrew Luck. That's coming up next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
On Wednesday of this week, Gordon Hayward held a camp for girls at the Tobin Community Center in Roxbury, which was a nice event. He had his wife there. His two oldest daughters were running around. It was very, very cute. It was very nice to see that event. Afterwards, he talked a little bit about the event. He talked a little bit about his workouts. So two things here. First of all, he talked about the coaching staff, and he talked about how when, like, he stayed in Boston all year and has been working out at the practice facility. Brad Stevens has mentioned, you know, how he's been there early and often, blah, blah, blah. So what Hayward has said is that the coaches that normally you would see these coaches taking breaks and going on vacations and whatever, a lot of them have stuck around. Not to say that they haven't gotten away, because I know they've gotten away a little bit, but maybe they've kind of changed their off-season routines a little bit. Regardless, it feels to me, Jay, that the Celtics know that this is a very, very, very important summer for Gordon Hayward, for the team. Last year, they saw what Gordon Hayward was, and they need him to get back to some level of what he was kind of in Utah, whatever that is, 85%, 90%, 95%, 100%, whatever it is. They need to get him back to himself, and I think Hayward obviously wants to do that. He's sticking around in Boston. The coaches are sticking around in Boston. I think that might be the most important thing that the Celtics can do for the success of their team is get Gordon Hayward back. And they're like sparing no expense trying to do that.
So I don't think this is a change for the Celtics coaches. I've always been very impressed by how willing they are to go out of their ways to help guys during the summer. Like guys will fly out, coaches will fly out to LA and spend a week with a guy. They'll fly out to Atlanta and spend a week with a guy. They'll go to great lengths to work with the players. I know Jay Larinaga has been to God knows where to help out Marcus Smart.
Miami, which is
a, yeah.
Interjection, plug my story, my pinned feature on my Twitter, the story of Jay Larinaga spending a summer in Miami with Marcus Smart. Go ahead, continue your point.
Yeah, so these guys have, and Jay's not at all the only coach. That was just one of the examples, but these coaches are, during their what should be their downtime, are more than willing to go out of the way to help Celtics players and work with Celtics players. The one difference I see this summer is Gordon Hayward's around. And Hayward was on the West Coast before. Now he's been in Boston. You hear a lot of talk about how early he's getting to their practice facility, how much he's working, how hard he's working. And I don't think that's a change for him. I'm sure he was putting in all the work elsewhere in the past, but now he's doing it with the coaches, and we'll see how it pans out. But obviously he's entering this season in a better place than he did last year. He's not just coming off surgery. He's been able to play 5-on-5. He's been able to get his work in and work the way he wants to without limited repetitions. And it seems like we're having the same conversation over and over again, but it's an important one. Damn important one. And, you know, especially with the way you look at the Celtics roster, how many established power forwards do they have? Zero.
Zero. Exactly.
Zero. They have Gordon Hayward, who's played power forward in lineups that mostly failed last season, but they probably mostly failed because Gordon Hayward wasn't himself and other guys were kind of figuring out how to play together. So Gordon Hayward is like one of the few guys with power forward minutes. And obviously Jason Tatum is long and Jaylen Brown is getting stronger and he's super athletic and maybe he can play some four, and Grant Williams and Semi Ojeleye will compete. But I think when you look at the roster, like Hayward being able to play those minutes and play well in those minutes and run the offense next to Kemba and do, like you said, do things that he did in Utah and become an all-star type again, that would be enormous for this Celtics team trying to reach its potential. And he's been in Boston working, getting stronger, getting better, and looking like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle in that photo you shared.
He did. He had that like tie back headband, which was really cool. This is where I would remind everybody that Gordon Hayward was the first of the stars that they signed before Kyrie Irving, before they traded for Kyrie Irving. Like, the goal was to get Gordon here. This was before Kyrie was even available. So the Celtics had a plan, and obviously things changed and whatever, but they're kind of going back to, okay, Gordon is our main guy. Like, Kemba's coming in as the guy because he's the point guard, but Hayward was supposed to be the focal point of the offense. And I don't know if he can do that again, if he can get back to that when he was in Utah, but we're at a point now where that may be where this is going. The Celtics are trying like hell to get Gordon back to being the number one option. Give it to him, let him create, run plays for him specifically, and then Kemba and Tatum can be options 2 and 3, depending on whichever, you know, 2A, whatever. But I think that if Hayward is 100%, he can be a number one option. I don't know if he's ever going to go back to that, but you look back to how he played in Utah, ball was in his hands a lot. He initiated the offense a lot. And I know I've been talking about him maybe coming off the bench, but there's who knows how this is going to go. It feels like this summer is all about getting Hayward back to what he used to be and doing everything that they can to do that. He also had some interesting comments about Andrew Luck, which I think shed some light on this. And he said this to Sherrod Blakely, who was also there. So obviously Andrew Luck retired for reasons that, you know, he pain and whatever. So he told Sherrod, quote, "It sucks. You feel isolated. It feels like a job because you're not getting to do the fun parts of it. And you always have these thoughts of what if I'm not the same player?" You have to bottle that and just focus on the present. And then he also said you have to lean on your support system. You can't try to take that all on by yourself. I think, Jay, that's shed some light on all of the stuff he was going through last year and this notion of it feels like a job because you don't get to do the fun parts of it. I think that's that sums up what Gordon Hayward was trying to do all last year. I don't think last year was fun for him at all.
Yeah, I think it was as frustrating for him as it was for anybody. And it started at the beginning of the season when he just wasn't himself. And you could see just the frustration on his face. And I know that look well because it's the same look I have in men's league when I'm out there and trying to make a move that used to be so easy to me, and I just can't do it. And there would be times in transition when he would miss a layup or get his shot blocked when he was just like rise over dudes and slam it on top of their heads. And you could see him just super frustrated. I don't think there were many times during the season when he felt the same type of joy. And when he did get those moments, like when he had, I think it was 35 points in Minnesota, and when he hit the game winner against Sacramento, you could see there was just like a transformation to him. And he went from being the frustrated, you know, injured player to the joyful, I remember how this feels, all-star in the making again, you know? And so you could just see every time that he took advantage of opportunities like that. Another example was the fourth game of the Indiana series when he kind of took it over down the stretch. He just transformed, and he's trying to capture that feeling again, and the Celtics are trying to capture that feeling again. And he's very, very important to what they're trying to do. And his form, I think, will go a long way toward deciding ultimately what this team will be.
Yeah, it's such an unknown at this point that, I mean, we're starting to talk about it, but it hasn't been much of a, I don't think it's been that huge of a discussion this summer about the wild possibilities here of what Gordon could be and the best and worst case scenario. So we'll see how it goes. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about Jason Tatum. ESPN says that he might be the next first-time All-Star. We'll talk about what that would take next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Jay, training camps open in about a month. We're a month away. We're almost there. And with that comes preseason predictions. ESPN put out a bunch of theirs. And the big thing here for the Celtics is Jason Tatum got 68% of the vote in the question, who are the most likely first-time All-Stars? So, in order, it was Tatum, Siakam, Trae Young, Tobias Harris, Miles Turner. Those were your answers. Tatum and Siakam both got 68.2% of their responding votes there. First of all, let's ask this. Do you think Jason Tatum can become an All-Star this season?
I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility. I think he'll need to average like 20, 21 points a game.
I don't think he needs to get that high. 17.
17?
Yeah.
He averaged close to 17 last year.
Yeah.
I mean, what all-star that isn't like a defensive player of the year candidate averaged 17 points a game?
Oh, God. I'm not going to go back and look at all the all-stars, but I guarantee you that they didn't all average over 20. I mean, you're going to get guys off the bench, maybe not voted in, but you're going to get guys. It depends on what the Celtics are doing, too. If the Celtics are a top two or three team and you're going to take two, three guys, then I would think there's a strong possibility that 17, 18 points could get him in, especially if the Celtics are winning. And, it kind of depends on how he's scoring those. So if he's scoring them in an efficient way, I think that'd be enough.
I think he's got to get to 20-ish.
Okay. I mean, and really, it's 2 points difference, so whatever.
I think that's within the realm of possibility. I think he'll probably have a bigger role because Al Horford's not there anymore to run so much offense through. And that's going to be a big deal. That's going to be a major change in how the Celtics have run things. And I don't know who will get those touches and those opportunities. And obviously, Horford didn't have a big usage rate, but it was just the offense was run through him. And he was the hub for so much of what they did. Now he's not there anymore. So the pick and rolls and the pick and pops and different situations, they're going to go to other guys. And I think Tatum has a chance. I think Gordon Hayward has a chance. I think Jaylen Brown has a chance to capitalize on some of those opportunities because I think the Celtics are going to have to really remake their offense now that Al Horford's not there. Maybe that means just running a lot more pick and rolls and highlighting Kemba Walker and letting him do his thing and having those other guys play off him. But I think a lot of it too will be utilizing some of those guards in dribble handoffs and pick and pops and things like that, that maybe they didn't get as many chances because Al Horford was always there as a hub and a worthy hub for the offense the past few years.
So while you were talking, I just looked up Chris Middleton last year. Chris Middleton, pre-All-Star, 17 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and he was an All-Star.
So for the 62-win team or whatever it was?
Right. It's exactly my point. If the Celtics
So you think the Celtics are going to win 62 and Tatum's going to be an All-Star at 17?
I'm saying, Jay, that...
I got to defend myself here. That's a bad look that there was one this year.
Yeah. If the Celtics are playing well, and like at that point, I don't know, what were the Milwaukee Bucks the number one seed at that point at the All-Star break? I don't remember. But if they're good, there you go. There's a 17-point-a-game guy that can go in there. He was actually better post-All-Star. He averaged 21 after the All-Star break, but it's possible. It's possible. It has to be, again, like I said, depends on how you score. He shot 38% from three. So if Jason Tatum can rebound from the drop in his three-point shooting, he can hit some more threes and just score whatever points that he scores in a little more of a spectacular way, then that I think can propel him to a reserve role, and who knows. But if the Celtics are middle of the pack, fifth seed, then that won't be enough. It really depends on how things are going for them. And it may depend on how well other players are playing. If Jaylen Brown's playing well and Gordon Hayward's playing well and they're not really putting up the numbers, but they're helping the team win and Tatum is the one putting up the numbers, then he could get in. I think it's
okay.
Possible.
So let's assume that Tatum does have to get to 20 or 21 points.
Sure.
What'd he say he wanted to in the NBA 2K interview? What'd he say he wanted to average 25 and 5?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that and make an all-star team?
Mm-hmm.
So how does he get there? Like, what are the changes he needs to make? What are the changes the Celtics need to make to get him there?
Well, I think the most obvious thing he needs to do is get to the free throw line a lot more. Like, that's the number one thing that can get him to the 20 points. Because like we said, last year he ended up averaging 16, or round up to 16 points a game. And then he shot 3 free throws a game. So if you get him, he shoots 85%. So you get him to the line 6 times, and now you're tacking on 2 more points. So now he's up to 18. And then if he can get his 3-point shooting percentage up, it was at 37% last year. If he can bump that up to like 38, 39. Now you're at like 19 and a half points per game. If he just drives more and finishes a little bit more around the rim, that easily gets you up to 20, over 20 points. But you got to get to the line a lot more in order to get to that 20 points.
And I keep harping on this. Shooting more threes is huge.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to just be willing to let it fly.
Yes, because a lot of those 2-point shots that he took, like, he took 9 2-pointers per game last year, but without diving into the advanced stats, I'm going to bet that maybe one or two of those per game were stepping into the three rather than sidestepping a closeout and shooting a three. The other thing he needs to do is grift a little bit more. When he up fakes and guys come into him, he's going to lean into that defender and get to the line for three shots rather than stepping in for a long two. Like, that's something that those little tweaks, just very minor things, looking to draw the fouls, get, if you drive, then drive and attack. If you're not going to drive and attack, then sidestep the shot at least, the closeout at least, and get yourself into an opportunity to take the three versus the two. Those little tweaks can get him to 20 points a game, I think, no problem, without even taking away from other players. Usually you say, oh, this guy averaged 16, he's going to get 20. Who's going to lose their 20 point, their points for him to get the 20? You don't even have to do that. He just has to tweak his actual game a little bit, and he can get to 20 on his own.
Yeah, I think it's right there. I think just changing a few habits would go a long way.
Absolutely.
It's not like just draw contact and shoot more threes. That's it.
And that's it.
And the drawing contact part is hard.
Sure. Like,
guys who get to the free throw line in the NBA are great at it, and they're usually very strong. And obviously Tatum, his frame is still filling out. He looks stronger now, but to play through contact, like, you got to be very strong, very crafty. Mm-hmm. And I think he does have the craft for it. I think he just needs to tweak some habits, and that's it. And shooting more three, he could shoot like 3 or 4 more threes per game. And the Celtics, I'm sure, would be fine with that.
Totally.
Like, just launch that bang. just let it go. Just let it go.
J. King's life mantra, just launch that bang.
That's my advice to everybody.
Say that to everyone, no matter what it is. It doesn't even have to be basketball. All right, that's it. That's the show. I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back in a few days, Monday. The Team USA begins their quest in the FIBA World Cup. Their first game is actually on Sunday. So Monday we'll be back here to talk about Jason Tatum and other Celtics' performance in the beginning of the FIBA World Cup, which is being played in China. That game is at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, so you can tune in. I can actually wake up and watch that. I'm not waking up for 5:30 game. So watch that game. Listen to us after that. Subscribe to the show if you're a new listener, wherever podcasts are available. If you can give us a 5-star rating somewhere, wherever it is, please do that. A good written review also helps. And share the podcast. Tell your friends they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Rainy days.